incoming and outgoing presidents rarely like each other very much, but they don't have one arrested or shot. Peaceful transition is a cherished feature of American democracy. But transition is a big and complicated process, and it imposes quite a few ethics rules and practices on both teams. For an update, we turn to Walt Schaub, director of the Office of Government Ethics. Walt, great to have you on.
Yes, thanks for having me.
First of all, just remind us where the Office of Government Ethics lives within the giant pantheon of the government.
Sure. Well, the Office of Government Ethics is actually its own freestanding agency. Years ago, when it was first created in 1978, it was part of the Office of Personnel Management. They later took us out and had us be our own independent agency so that we could carry out our work in a more unfettered way.
And how many are there of you?
There's about 80 people in the Office of Government Ethics, but the ethics program is actually a decentralized program so that there are about 4,000 or 4,500 ethics officials across the executive branch, and we provide them support and guidance, regulatory framework to operate in, and we go out and review their programs and work very closely with them.
Okay, so at this point of time, every 4 years, we have an administration in place, we have political appointees in place, and we have career people who are waiting to see what happens. What are some of the ethical constraints on those people that are in the government now?
So, you know, as you say, every 4 years, we ramp up for a possible presidential transition, and a transition for OGE is a little bit like April 15th for an accountant. We have to, you know, it becomes all-consuming for us, and even after a first term of a president, we have to prepare as though there's going to be a transition, just in case. So we've got a good bit of experience doing this, and the main issues we've flagged for folks in the government, particularly at the most senior levels, individuals who have the most authority and the most potential for conflicts of interest, is as they're seeking employment to leave the government, they have to recuse from any particular matters affecting their prospective employers. So they have to be very careful in terms of who they're talking to and making sure that they're working with their ethics officials to recuse to avoid any conflicts of interest. Then after they leave the government, they have restrictions on what they can do in the private sector for a period of time after they leave the government. And ethics officials provide them counseling on both the seeking of employment and the post-employment restrictions. So we try to make sure people are aware of those issues and seek the counseling as they need it.
And who handles the advisement of this to federal employees at the ground level within the agencies? Would that be the general counsel's office?
So in many cases, the ethics office is within the general counsel's office of an agency. In some agencies, like HHS, although it's within the general counsel's office, it's its own freestanding office. For a period of time, which it's no longer the case, but USDA had an ethics office outside general counsel's office. They've since moved it into general counsel's office. But there are professional ethics officials who do this work, and they're embedded in the agency, so they really have close contact with the employees who need the counseling from them and really understand the operations of their agencies and can give people guidance tailored to the types of things they might have to get involved in at their own agencies.
How frequently do people violate these ethical guidelines?
I think as a prevention mechanism, OGE and agency ethics officials have been very effective in preventing instances of violations. Of course, you read about violations in the paper and on the news, but you have to remember, between the civilian and military workforce, we're talking about 4 million individuals. Percentage-wise, we have an incredibly low rate of violation and a very effective prevention mechanism, primarily through agency ethics training, which the more senior employees have to attend every single year, and through the counseling that individual employees get from their ethics officials.
And what are some of the sanctions that can happen to someone if they do violate?
Well, these are criminal laws. And so in some cases, it could involve 5 years in jail or significant financial penalties. There are also less severe violations that could result in disciplinary action. For folks who are not leaving the government but are still in government, they run the risk of having their employment terminated and their careers severely affected. There are also civil penalties for some violations, and those can be quite costly, particularly if somebody has engaged in multiple infractions.
I imagine if you're a company considering someone coming from the government, it's probably advisable for you as the future employer to be aware of what the ethical guidelines are.
Yeah, that's true. And in most cases, the rules don't prohibit people from going to work for certain employers, but they do prohibit representations back to the federal government because the goal is to prevent them from leveraging their contacts in the federal government to gain disproportionate influence as compared to somebody who had not been in the government. So while in many cases you can hire the person and they can accept the employment, their activities will be limited according to what level they were at or what activities they were involved in. And it's important to get a clear picture of where that line is drawn so that you can figure out if you can assign them other activities in the private sector rather than having them interact with the federal government.
We're speaking with Walt Schaub. He is director of the Office of Government Ethics. And for the incoming potential teams, you're going to have varying levels of experience in government, both in the candidates themselves and in the staffs and appointees they bring along. What are some of the best mechanisms for making sure that the incoming team, whoever it might be, is thoroughly versed in what some of the norms of federal ethics are?
So this is really where the bulk of our work is focused, on the people coming in. Again, we're trying to serve as a prevention mechanism. During a presidential transition, you've got about 4,000 presidential appointees leaving government, and 1,100 of them are civilians who are in Senate-confirmed positions. We work with the civilians in Senate-confirmed positions as part of the nomination process, and we support both the president in nominating them and the Senate in considering them. We work with them to review financial disclosure reports, identify conflicts of interest, establish ethics agreements that will resolve the conflicts of interest, track the ethics agreement compliance, and in fact, make sure that the agencies are conducting appropriate training for these individuals. As part of that nominee process, they work extremely closely with agency ethics officials and OGE ethics officials, and that is their first introduction to the executive branch. So we're fortunate in that sense that their first encounter with government culture is with ethics officials who are there to teach them that the rules are really a lot more strict in the federal government than in the private sector, and things that they've been allowed to do before they came to government, like accepting gifts or lunches or trips, are not going to be acceptable in the federal government in their new positions. This is really labor-intensive work, though, and the number of nominees coming through OGE next year will triple what it is this year, and so it really becomes an all-consuming activity on our part to help bring these folks in and start out on the right foot with a strong ethical culture.
And over the years, what is the question that you get most frequently from those incoming people?
I think it's less of a question and more of an expression of dismay when they discover that certain financial interests are going to be incompatible with the jobs that they want to get. And in those cases, they have to sell off those financial interests or restructure them, quit outside positions. This can be a bitter pill to swallow. And in fact, coming into the federal government to engage in public service at a high level really is a significant sacrifice. And we're incredibly fortunate that in this country, despite the incredibly burdensome and intrusive nominee process, we continue to find public servants who are willing to come in government, take these high-level positions, learn the rules, comply with them, and it comes at no small cost to them. I personally had to deliver a lot of bad news to people, and although we're very strict about it, my heart goes out to them, and I'm grateful that they're willing to come in and do the job.
Sounds like you have a good combination of toughness and love and appreciation for those people.
Well, I really do believe in public service, and I think most of the folks who come to us through the nominee process or otherwise do, too. And so we're very proud of our work as a prevention mechanism, and the first step of that is to really impress upon them that this isn't just a paper-pushing exercise filling out a financial disclosure report, but actually an extremely substantive opportunity to help prevent them from violating laws, embarrassing whoever the new president winds up being, and possibly landing themselves in jail or paying civil penalties or damaging their career.
Yeah, you don't want that Burt Lance effect to keep happening throughout the generations. And just as a technical point, at this point in the election, we haven't even had the debates yet, are you starting to talk with the respective teams, or is it too early for that?
Yeah, no, it's not too early at all. For us, the transition actually begins 2 years out, and we start by training our folks to have increased capacity to review the higher number of reports coming in. And then the first 1 year out, start training agency ethics officials to increase their capacity. Starting in about May, we began communicating directly with major campaigns. We'd actually been working with individual representatives of them much longer than that because we review their presidential candidate financial disclosure reports. But in this instance, starting in May, we began communicating with the transition teams for both of the major presidential campaigns, and we've continued working closely with them. They've been, on both sides, incredibly responsive and willing to learn what we have to share with them, and I think we can really give them the benefit of past experience with presidential transitions.
What a great close-up seat to history. Walt Schaub is director of the Office of Government Ethics. Thanks so much for joining me.
Yes, thank you very much.
Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.